Hello and welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, and mentor. Bernard Pearson is a highly experienced real estate expert and Jake and Gino student since 2021. It's been 3 years. Wow, time flies. As the managing partner and founder of Equity Partners LLC, he specializes in multifamily real estate investments. He has invested actively and passively across 30 plus properties and utilizes his strong ability to identify value and apply innovative financing strategies to maximize returns. Welcome to the show, Mr. Bernard Pearson.
Thanks, Gino. How are you? Great seeing you on here again.
Brother, 3 years. I can't believe it, huh? Time flies.
Yeah, time flies. It's crazy. It's incredible. It's been a good 3 years.
And let me ask you, it's been a great 3 years. And this is for anybody sitting on the fence saying, oh, I don't know. Is it the right time to get into real estate? Well, 2021, Bernard's in Miami. It's during COVID. He's probably saying to himself, I don't know if now is the right time to invest in real estate. And what prompted you to get into multifamily back in 2021?
Well, so I was already in real estate, and I had been on the fence for years about growing or exponentially growing even more. I started off in development years ago, and then it was just the right time. I during COVID we were all home a lot. We had a lot of time to think, and that it turned out to be a great time. It was scary to your point. Like it was like, oh, should I do it now? Should I wait? Like, let's just wait for this whole thing to pass and. But it was the right time. It definitely was. I'm happy I did it.
And, you know, usually Jake likes to jump into podcasts and ask questions and jump right in. But when I saw 2021, I remember coming to those events with you. I remember you going to all those events. And it's already been like 3 years. Time does fly. And I've seen your growth. I've seen the way you've been able to brand yourself, the way you've been able to capital raise, the way you've been able to really focus and hone in. Give me a little bit of story of your background, you know, how you got into real estate and, you know, how you ended up in Miami.
Yeah. So I was born in Miami. I'm in the 80s, right? So there was a war in Nicaragua where my parents were originally from, and I was born here because my parents were here living because of that war. And long story short, when I was like 5 or 6 years old, we moved back to Nicaragua, grew up there, did high school, elementary, everything. And then when I was 18, I moved back to the US. So I'm kind of like, I consider myself Nicaraguan American. I have two passports, three actually, but the two passports that I love the most, right, which is Nicaragua and the U.S. I started off in real estate development right around 12 years ago, and I was developing property or residential communities and homes and condos in Nicaragua and some in Costa Rica, and it was good, right? But I quickly became frustrated with the process of doing business in Latin America in general. I think everything moves a lot slower. The economies are smaller, and I was investing passively at the same time here in the US as an LP in different syndications. And I was very happy with the results I was getting. And that's when I decided, you know what, it's time to just start moving my active side of my business to the US. So that's basically how I started, how I moved on.
And it's funny that Bernard is being very gentle and kind by saying, I was frustrated by doing business in Latin America. That's another word for saying it sucked down there. It took forever. I got to pay all these officials off. There's so much work to be done. At the end of the day, what's left over? And I think the important thing is he was developing. So maybe he was developing and selling, but then all of a sudden it's done. And then you got to go back and do it again and go through that process. And it's got to be really painful. When did it dawn upon you?
To your point, yeah, you know, that's absolutely right. I got into real estate because I didn't want to be in a transactional business, right? And I found myself in a transactional business when I was developing. Because to your point, I was building it and I had to sell it, and then I had to start all over again. I'm like, what the hell did I do, right? Why did I do this? This is not the point. Why I did this? Sorry, go ahead.
but you at least at a young age understood that and got that. Some of us have that mindset or that psychology of money where it's really sexy, it's enticing. It's beautiful to see something that is a patch of dirt. And then 2 years later, to have condominiums and townhomes, and part of your ego is like, Bernard's like, bro, I did that. That's what I did. But then you give away the keys to somebody, you made a nice chunk of change, but then you got to go do it all over again. And it's like, this has got to be tiring. And I think to 2021, why did you join Jake and Gino? What were some of the pain points and challenges that you had from coming from development and saying, I want to get into this multifamily game?
Right. Yeah. So back then when I joined Jake and Gino, I probably done a handful of multifamily deals more on the acquisition side or just value. Yeah. Even syndications or joint ventures. And I just wasn't growing at the pace I wanted to, and I knew I needed the support of the community, the networking, the education, the accountability, definitely. So I knew I needed all that, and I was looking for at different options, right? And it turned out Jake and Gino was definitely the best choice for me. So I was happy I joined. I am still very happy. It changed my life.
So support, networking, communication, and Bernard, you're someone who's out there.
It's very lonely when you're doing this, right? You're like, it's very lonely. You're by yourself. You're trying to figure it out, and I'm like, okay, so, how do I get someone? You know, how do I get company in this?
Mm-hmm. And when you joined, I remember going to these events, preparing the education. Since you already knew it, you know, the buy right, the manage right, the finance right. Seems as if you gravitated towards the capital raising and the branding. Let's really talk about that, because Bernard, I think everybody gets into this game and says, all I can do is one thing. I need to do everything. I need to buy these deals, manage these deals. I need to finance these deals. I need to run these deals. You know, how did you find the lane that you like? How did you, you know, decide that this is what I want to do?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's definitely a mistake. We all try to do too much at the same time. And we're like, we want to be like our lone wolf or something to do our thing, and it's just very hard to do it that way, and it just takes a lot longer, right? And probably pre joining the community, I was taking more of that lane, but as I joined, as you were saying, I gravitated towards capital raising. I think a lot of that came because I live in Miami, and the deals in Miami didn't really attract me, although they're great, right? But I just didn't do deals here. They wouldn't pencil the way I would like them to pencil, which is, you know, a little bit more cash flow and whatnot. They've appreciated greatly, right? So I should have probably done it, but I didn't, regardless. So there's a lot of money in Miami. It's a big city. It's a vibrant city. It has a big financial sector, I guess, or part of the economy is very financially driven. And it's grown even more recently. There's also a lot of influence from Latin America, which is where I have deep roots in, right? And I connect very well with that audience. I connect very well with Latin Americans. I speak the language. I've done business down there, so I know the pain points of doing business in Latin America. I've actually done real estate in Latin America, so I know the specific pain points of doing real estate in Latin America, and I've done a lot of it. So I connect extremely well with that audience from Latin America. And it was almost organic where I started connecting very well with different groups from Latin America, either small family offices or small funds, or even real estate developers that were looking to expand into the US. And me being Nicaraguan American, I'm almost like a great fit to help them hold their hand and understand how to do business here and how to get involved in this market. Because it's also not an easy market to get involved in, especially if you're foreign, right? Their laws are different. Everything's different. So we identify from the pain points, but I can also help them on how to move here, be it move to live or move to do business, because I've done it before. I've done both, and I guess it's just the perfect individual that I can add value to the most in the world. This is something I started noticing very quickly.
So Bernard, you started putting the dots together, because when you probably joined, you probably said to yourself, I'm going to do business this way. But what I like about your story, and I think what most students see, is just try to have an open mind. That's why we join these organizations and these companies, and we do these memberships, mentorships, and masterminds, because we don't know what we don't know. And the fact that you're open and saying, you know what, I never even thought about raising capital. Okay, let me raise some capital. Wow, let me drill it down even more. Let me think about raising capital from people that I know, that I can help, that I can add value, that I can resonate with. So if you're listening to this right now, you may be in Bernard's shoes, where you may be a medical doctor, you may be a spine surgeon, and go, you know what, I don't really want to do spine surgery anymore. I want to get into multifamily, and I want to do this, but how do I help other people that I resonate with? So go out there. If you're in a in a certain industry. And Bernard, real quick, I'll share a quick story with you. I was on a gentleman's podcast who was a chef, and he's syndicating multifamily, and he's just speaking to other chefs out there, whether they're, you know, working for big companies or whether they're private chefs. And then from there, he's speaking to nannies who make really great income. He's speaking to pilots who are, you know, corporate pilots. And it's such a big demographic and a big group that's underutilized and underserved. When you are thinking about your venture and you're doing this deal and you're thinking about raising capital from these groups, how did you go about it? How did you create your pitch and how did you talk to them about raising capital?
What I figured it was very important to understand that if they're here looking, so let me back up a little. So the way it all started was I started getting invited to events in Spanish, right? To talk multifamily and different opportunities. So I was on stage, which makes me uncomfortable, but I did it. After the event was over or whatever, a lot of the groups would come up to talk with me, right? And say, hey, how do I get involved? How do we do this? So the short answer is getting on stage, getting exposure is what helped me. But to your point, resonating with the audience was definitely the key. Speaking Spanish natively was huge because they felt comfortable coming to me. A lot of these investors, although they speak English, it's not their first language. Culturally, Latin America is very different than the U.S. And Latin America is also very different within itself, right? But we're more similar as Latin Americans than we are with the U.S., at least culturally. So that connection made everything a lot easier. And to your point, we just resonated very well. And getting out there and talking at this event is what really jump-started it. I educated myself very well, both with the Jake and Gino community and just being informed in general. With the market and whatnot, and showing to them in their language that I know what I'm talking about is what really gave them the confidence to want to do business with me, right? And the fact that I had done it before, so I could tell them, I know what you're going through. I know how hard it is to get a permit to build a building down where you are. I've done it before, and I know how frustrating it is, and I know all your pain points. I've been there, and I would describe it to them, right? Word by word, they're like, oh, right. He actually hit it right on the head. And that really helped that resonation even more, right? And now they're like, now we're here. And we know you were here, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 years ago. We want to do what you're doing. So how do we do it? And they also told me, you know, we realize you live here, we don't. And we realize we need a partner, if you will, right? And we trust. We'd rather work with someone who's here and knows what they're doing than us trying to venture this from thousands of miles away or 5-hour flight or whatever away and trying to figure it out. We know we need to invest rather than actively do this.
So Bernard, what you're doing beautifully is you're objection blocking. You're putting out all the objections in the front so they can't come back and say, well, what are some of the fears that you've seen? If I'm listening to the show right now, I'm like, I want to start raising capital, but I need to address certain things. And you addressed a couple already, but what are some of the big fears that you see when you start talking to people about investing in your multifamily deals?
So me specifically, because of the circumstances of where these investors come from, if you think we have an inflation problem in the US, well, you should go down to South America, right? Or Central America. That's a whole different story. So that's one, right? Like, Their first fear is, how do I get out of my currency? How do I get out of my country? At least financially, right? So they want to understand that part, right? And also your track record, obviously. So that is something that maybe you can resolve with partners or whatnot if maybe you don't have the track record. But they want to see that you have the experience. In my case, it was a little bit easier to get over the general fears from investors, just because my investors, most of them come from a real estate background, so they're used to the real estate risks and they understand real estate a lot better. Even though it's different, they understand it, and they come from a development world, which is even riskier. So that in for me, getting my investors over the fear was not much of a challenge, honestly. But those were the big challenges, or the big questions, like, right, inflation, are you worried about inflation in the US, which was an easy answer when we compare it to Latin America. Are you worried about interest rates? Also an easy answer when you compare it to Latin America. Like the challenges we've dealt with and survived in Latin America are a lot greater, right? So this all looks pretty easy, if you will. I know it's not, but it looks pretty smooth compared to a lot of the factors we deal with
in the U.S. So Bernard, we were talking a little bit a while ago and talking about, so you're focusing a lot of people that are living in Latin America. I want you to take the focus of people living in the United States. Do you think your pitch is any different? Because let's say somebody is working with investors in this country, because in this country, we are worried about inflation, right? It's a hard asset. Do you think you're going to change your pitch a little bit? Or is it sort of going to be the same way where it's like, hey, this is a hard asset. It really is. I don't want to call it inflation resistant or cycle resistant, but it does do better in downturns if you buy the asset. Are you going to change anything when you're speaking to people who live in this country who are of Latin American descent?
Yeah, definitely. It depends. If you're in Miami, a lot of them came here recently and they still have their business in Latin America. So although they live here, they may still be exposed to the, you know, the economy of Latin America. But regardless, so let's say it's someone that lives here and has their job here, they'll be two or not or whatever, and now they're here. I guess I would rely more on, we identify culturally, we identify with the language. We've both moved here, so we're very similar in that. We've both been through the same challenges of moving to a different country and more of an understanding. And to your point, I would definitely go more to rely again on the benefits of multifamily, which we definitely know. And I mean, we can go into them, right. But I think we talk about those often. So, I would definitely rely more on those, right. On the typical benefits of inflation protection and whatnot.
When you're said something a couple of minutes ago on the show that really made me chuckle, because we all say this, man, I wish I had bought a couple of years ago in Miami because of the appreciation. And I could say, yeah, you might have missed out, but that wasn't your investing model. And you're going against your values, what your values are, because it appears that I know you're in the Kansas City market. You're looking more for cash flow with a blend of capital appreciation, not just capital appreciation, because there is risk there. And if you're telling your investors, hey, I'm buying for $10, hopefully in 2 or 3 years, I'm going to sell it for $20. But I'm not sure, because everything has to line up and the timing goes really well. Talk about your investing strategy and, you know, what markets you're looking at right now.
Yeah, so Kansas City, as you said, and maybe a surrounding area around Kansas City. My partner lives there in the area, so he's local to it, which helps a lot. Going back to your previous question on one of the concerns is, okay, so how do you manage all these properties from Miami? Although you can, right, with third party and whatnot, or there's ways to manage remotely, especially the large properties that. Well, for me, it's an easier answer because my partner lives there locally. We really like that market demographically. It's not a Miami or an Austin or a Phoenix or even an Atlanta. I mean, it's not that sort of market that's extremely hot, but we are seeing growth. We are seeing rent growth. We are seeing a lot of interest in the market. A lot of the economy is diversifying. So those are the type of things we look at, and we want to stay, we prefer those markets that are a little bit more stable, if you will, and have historically been stable than those big fluctuating markets that maybe do give you the potential for that huge appreciation, but you have to bet more maybe on the appreciation, and maybe it will come, maybe it won't. And I'm not saying it's a bad strategy to do that. Like investing in Miami, it very well may be a good strategy. But we like to have a property that cash flows today, just to be able to cover that service comfortably and for the numbers to make sense ongoing today. We're also focusing a lot more on newer assets. We've noticed with experience and through the years that buying those older buildings can be very painful, and just the CapEx can really surprise you. And it just adds a tremendous amount of risk, in my opinion, to the deals. And we've noticed that a big way of mitigating the risk to any potential unknown CapEx exposure is to go newer. Just go newer. And I know we all know this on the first deal, and we've been told, I guess, by our coaches and mentors, and just don't buy it. And it's tempting, and you go and buy it anyways, right? That 70s or 60s or 50s build or whatever. But experience really, that's the other thing. Experience is the best teacher. I mean, yeah, like it's, I guess experience mixed with education is great, right? Because then you experience and you're like, oh, that's what they were teaching me, right? Okay, so they were saying it. Now I get it.
Yeah, Bernard, to be fair, these older buildings were okay 6 or 7 years ago and the prices were a little bit cheaper. So the CapEx tsunami that we talk about, and you're preaching Jake and Gino principles, buy right criteria, you know, buying assets that are newer. It's just as part of the market cycle. When you're buying a property in Kansas City that may be a C property for 75 or 80 a door, let's say, and a B property maybe 85 or 90 a door, they're very similarly priced. Why would you buy the older asset when you can buy the newer asset? Now, hopefully in this next market cycle, it shifts where these older value-add properties, they really drop substantially in price where you can go out and buy them. And there's a couple of things that I would say to people that, you know, Bernard's talking about getting into it. If you're thinking about sitting on the sidelines and you're doing something that's transactional and you want to build wealth, a couple of things that you should do is probably select the market, number one. Number two, focus on what your investing criteria is. There's no one criteria that's right or wrong. There's nothing wrong to say that, hey, capital appreciation is wrong or just cash flow is wrong. It really depends upon your situation. Now, for me, I don't want just capital appreciation because I want to be able to pay my bills every month and have a dividend yield left over. That's just my strategy. But for Bernard, for anyone listening right now and they want to get into multifamily, give me a couple of things that they should be doing right now and not sitting on the sidelines and saying, I'm going to wait till this market corrects. Because if you're waiting, when the market corrects, it's too late. It already has corrected. It's already down 13% since 2022. What are you waiting for? Are you going to wait for the next correction and then the market's going to take off again and you're going to be there 2 years from now going, I'm going to wait till it corrects? So give me some tips or some pointers on what I can do right now to get into multifamily.
So definitely, as you were saying, the criteria is going to be huge. I mean, you have to set your criteria, select your markets, define your criteria. That doesn't, sometimes we're scared to define our criteria because we think, oh, I'm going to find a deal that's a little bit outside. I'm not going to be able to buy it. It doesn't mean you can't deviate a little bit from your criteria occasionally for the right reasons, right? But you have certain cores of criteria that you shouldn't deviate from, right? And once you define them, and maybe that's, I'm not going to buy older buildings because I don't want to deal with CapEx nightmares or be exposed to CapEx. Maybe that's not one of them. Maybe that's, I'm going to buy only in appreciating markets, or I'm just, but define your criteria and don't be scared of it, because you will be able to deviate a little bit from it and make exceptions. Basically, the other thing is, I hear a lot of people saying there aren't any deals, there's no deals. And my question to them is, what are you doing, to find deals? Are you actually doing something to find deals? Are you putting in offers? My suggestion would be, go on LoopNet, go on Crexie, go on Brocade, go on all these brokers websites, get your deal flow from there. And that's where you get your initial deal flow. You're not going to get your initial off market deal from a broker. He's not going to give it to you. He may say he will, but he won't. And just start underwriting deals. Get very good at underwriting, even if that's not what you're going to do, because that's going to help you understand multifamily very well. Or whatever industry you're doing, it's going to help you understand it very well. And it's going to give you the practice. So you underwrite. That's something Bill Hamm actually really ingrained in me. And underwrite. Today, I don't underwrite. We have a full-time underwriter in-house. But I mean, I still do, right? But I'm just not underwriting all day. But you have to understand it. You have to understand underwriting, and you have to get that practice. So just because then you're going to start getting the better feel for the market, you're going to understand the markets. It's going to be your best practice, and it's going to make you relate with the talk with the brokers, right? Because as you underwrite and as you get your deal flow, it creates a connection. When you sign that confidentiality agreement, they may start calling you, they may start asking questions, or you may call them. Just get in the market, underwrite. And the last thing I'm going to say is, don't be scared to make offers. Maybe make them verbal if you don't want to insult brokers or sellers. I mean, if they're asking for 150 a door and your underwriting says 100, just call the broker and tell him, hey, I'm not going to put in an offer because I'm coming in at 100 and I don't want to insult you. I just want to let you know how I got there and these are the reasons. And you let me know if you want the offer or not. You'll be surprised by how many times they're going to say, send the offer in today's market.
And you're going to be surprised, especially in this part of the market cycle, where the broker is going to say, yeah, I agree with you, but we got offers that are higher because the market's still a little frothy, depending on what city you're in. It really depends. And that has been, I mean, I would challenge everyone to go back and listen to what Bernard just said, because that's the crux. First of all, you need to understand what a deal is to you. So selecting a market is important. Then you need to learn the market itself by underwriting. Then you'll understand what prices are, what valuations are, what rents are, where the median income is of the market. Then you'll start opting into brokers' lists, because Bernard the broker is not selling Gino a deal unless Bernard the broker really gets to understand Gino's business and knows that Gino can close the deal. So why would Bernard do that? Bernard's got other people. I want to get on Bernard's list and I want to start seeing these deals. And then I may go do a couple of property tours with these deals that may not make sense, just to meet Bernard and talk to Bernard and then be armed with the knowledge of, okay, Bernard, this is my criteria. I'm looking for 80s build, 50,000 median income. I like two bedroom garden style. I like townhomes as well. I love garages. If you have washer dryer hookups, all of a sudden Bernard's getting a picture of, okay, Gino's a pretty serious buyer. He knows what he wants. If I get that asset, bam, that's what I'm going to send him. So start learning the business, start networking out there, start holding yourself accountable. And once you do all that, the pictures and the pieces will start falling into place. But there is some work that needs to be done on the front end as far as learning the business. Where do you see yourself in this business in the next 3 years?
I see myself raising funds, helping again, and continuing to raise funds by helping individuals from Latin America and more that high net worth or even ultra high net worth, and eventually maybe the more of a retail investor. But today we're really focusing on that high net worth and ultra high net worth individual from Latin America that has a business maybe in Latin America and needs to diversify and is starting to get nervous